Welcome to Hacker Voice Radio, and on the line we have our good friend, Captain Crunch, as well as Ionix. So I'd just like to introduce the infamous Super Freak.
Why? Where did I ruin that title?
Well, it's just, I was playing Rick James Super Freak a few minutes ago. Thought we'd use that as an introduction music.
Had something to do with some Esquire article, I believe.
So, for many of the listeners listening to the show...
Doing a test right now, can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay, good.
Cool.
Sorry, I had to make sure that I wasn't muting the mic.
Okay. For the many listeners that may be listening to now, they're probably aware of you or your history. Now, I read an article or a short interview that was done, that was done with you. Now, what amazed me was the fact that when you were sent to prison, you did more damage or potential damage to the telephone companies than you would have if you weren't in prison. Would you be able to kind of clarify on that? Because it just seems like a very kind of weird paradox. And did the authorities not even consider that fact, that putting you in close confinement with, criminals and murderers would do man damage?
I think that's probably it. The authorities didn't really consider the ramifications of putting me and exposing me to the criminal minds.
It just it amazes me that could have happened like that. I mean, I'm not aware.
The system was so full of holes that it only required a very tiny bit of information to really cause a major disruption in their toll collection capabilities. The system was just absolutely Swiss cheese as far as getting access to it. I proved that I could even access the network from a payphone at a place called Grasshopper Junction, Arizona, and it was a crank phone, the kind that you turn the crank and get the operator. I was even able to place a call from there and infiltrate into the network. I mean, it's that full of Swiss cheese, and very little information needs to be conveyed to a very small handful of people to get it out there, and that's how it all got out there. Obviously, people were very careful once they got the information. Some of them, once they obtained it, would try to hang on to it for themselves. But eventually, more and more people started doing it, and it started costing them a lot more money.
So what was the exact crime you were sentenced under?
Title 18, Section 1343, so I'm told.
Right, so that's basically
fraud by wire, yeah. Making free phone calls.
Right, okay. That's, I mean, fair enough, but, I mean, in your...
But I think that...
Sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, in my point of view, from the gist of your history that I got, my impression was that the knowledge that you had with these Swiss cheese... Hello?
Hello, I've lost your audio.
All right. Hello, can you hear us? Hello? Hello?
Check one.
Yeah, I can hear you. I guess I just went offline there for a second. Let's call you back. Hello?
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah,
yeah, I guess Skype's showing its faults. I was saying that with the knowledge that you had of, and what you said, the Swiss cheese, the holes of the telecommunications network, would it not have been an advantage to the telecommunications companies to actually not send you to prison, but maybe silence you by employing you?
Well, obviously that was... Ooh, I hear myself echo badly.
Is that any better?
Yeah.
Okay.
Obviously, if they had taken that route, I honestly believe that I would have agreed to some type of a muzzle order had I been properly given consideration for my assistance in the matter. I.e., in other words, I would probably I would probably agree to plead guilty to a misdemeanor or a non-felony charge in return for not getting any other jail time or whatever else. And then, of course, providing them with information that would help them out, you know, and working for them and actually being paid. Obviously, I would insist on being paid for my work, but, you know, that, of course, never happened. And I agreed. In fact, I went through my attorney on many occasions to discuss this with the phone company. I myself have contacted the phone company on many occasions and offered my assistance in helping to... make it hard to do that, but their system was just so full of Swiss cheese, it's virtually impossible. So even not, I couldn't really do anything about it. Yeah. I could do a little bit, but not that much.
So, how much time did you spend actually in confinement in prison?
Total of 4 months.
4 months. Okay. Okay. And after that, did you progress into a career, or did you continue freaking or teaching people, or exploration of?
I distanced myself from other hackers.
Right.
Up until a time when one particular person, and I'm not afraid to name him either. I've named him on my website.
Okay.
Go to a snitch in time section. You'll know who it is.
So, Ionix, do you have any questions to put through to Captain Crunch?
I was wondering, at what point did you find out about the 2600 hertz tone, and how did you come about figuring out that the Captain Crunch whistle actually made it?
A lot of that information is on my site. I'll reiterate here real briefly. I was experimenting around with an FM transmitter and put it on the air on an antenna with the deliberate intention of seeing how far I could get the signal. I made an announcement that if anybody heard me, to please call my number, and they gave out a number. And I got called by this kid who said he heard me and picked me up. Later on, I hooked up with him again at some other random call. Same kid, I recognized his voice. He told me he was a phone freak. And I asked him what a phone freak was. He explained it to me. He says, oh, this is interesting. At the time, I really wasn't working and had a really need to make free calls. So I went over to his house, and upon invitation, at which time he introduced me to another blind kid from Oregon. And that was when I actually determined that sending the tones down the line would make free calls. Almost immediately when I got back, I got into my my parts bin and started making the necessary electronics to make that happen.
So, at what point were you introduced to Wozniak? Was that later on?
Oh, that didn't occur until later.
Right, okay.
I got a call from a friend of mine in Berkeley that said he wanted me to meet this other guy. So he talked me into going down to the UC Berkeley dorm, at which time I met Steve Wozniak, all of his friends, where he had built a blue box. One I might add, which would be, I might add that it was not a very, very safe one to use. It generated harmonics, subharmonics that made it detectable
right.
through ordinary equipment.
Okay.
And eventually, that was how I met him. That was the first time. Other times that I met him were at computer club meetings. Mm-hmm. And he'd also come to the computer place where I worked and would sign up for computer time, and I would assist him in generating his 6502 code that he used in his Apple I or Apple II or whatever it was.
So, was it potentially dangerous to be able to have, at that time, a blue box? I mean, I've heard stories.
Okay, there's a statute in California called 502.7, mm-hmm. which makes it illegal to possess a blue box, but it was a state law, not a federal law. Right. There's no federal law that says you can't possess one, only a state law.
Right.
So if you get caught with one, the state can prosecute you on a misdemeanor charge.
Mm-hmm.
So having one and possessing one is unsafe. Using one from home for a while was safe, as long as you were very careful not to make like you're calling the U.S. recruiting office for 3.5 hours every day. By using their 800 number to make calls. If you're very careful and understanding how traffic pattern analysis works, you could probably get away with doing it from home, provided you just didn't do it too much, and you'd probably be able to sneak under their radar.
Right.
It wasn't until later on that they had started putting equipment in there to detect it. But that became much later, that way after the Esquire article.
Right, okay. And how easy was it?
But up until the time the Esquire article came out, it was pretty safe to do it from home, you know. As long as you didn't use 555-1212 numbers, which are information, toll-free information numbers.
Right.
Use those, and it's a dead giveaway.
Hmm. So basically you had to dial
an 800 number.
Right, okay.
And it had to be a valid 800 number. It had to go to a real company.
Mm-hmm.
And you had to have a reason for calling it. Like they said, if they would probably blink if you had made 3-hour phone calls to the Army recruiting office's 800 number.
Yeah.
So, you know. Yeah. So there's obvious common sense precautions that one must take during that time to do it.
Yeah.
But post Esquire article, after that point, forget it. Doing it from home is definitely a bust.
Yeah.
Because, you know, during that time that Esquire article came out, grand juries were formed. It became very uncool. Phone companies started scrambling to put all kinds of detection equipment on their network.
Right. So then, would you say that the actual blue box was born? You had to have like a mobile device to be able to do this.
Yeah, it would be safe to use them for payphones up to a point.
Hmm.
Provided that your calls were shorter than 10 minutes.
Right.
with the expectation that it would probably take 10 minutes to get for them to notice that you're making the call from the payphone. And again, it would depend on how you were able to make the call from the payphone. There are certain payphones back when this was possible that in order to call an 800 number, you had to go through an operator.
Right.
Well, if you use the blue box when you go to an operator, her lights splash on her board.
Mm-hmm.
See, point.
Hmm.
Provided that your calls were shorter than 10 minutes.
Right.
With the expectation that it would probably take 10 minutes to get for them to notice that you're making the call from the payphone. And again, it would depend on how you were able to make the call from the payphone. There are certain payphones back when this was possible that in order to call an 800 number, you had to go through an operator.
Right.
Well, if you use the blue box when you go to an operator, her lights splash on her board.
Mm-hmm.
So you had to give her some kind of lame excuse why her lights are going to flash and why that's normal.
Right.
And one of my favorite plays was to tell the operator it was a data call to ignore false supervision. And usually they would fall for that.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be pretty easy to tell when they click on the line, too. You just had to make sure not to go beep, not let your box go beep at a time when they're listening.
Right. So what kind of things did you find once you knew what you
One moment,
do?
Please. I have another call on my cell phone. Just a second.
Sure. Okay.
Okay, we need to wind things up here, so give me about another 5 minutes, and I got to break off here.
Sure. Okay. Just quickly.
Do you want to talk about some of the things you've been doing more recently?
Yeah.
Yeah. Let me cover that.
Cool.
One of the last about 2 years ago, my web server and my email system. I provided email for my close friends, 80 email messages. Well, I was using a Mac OS 9 and EIMS Eudora mail server, which was very difficult at the time to prevent unauthorized relaying through the mail. Spammers got me on every black hole list you could imagine. So I took it upon myself that as a personal attack against me, so I declared war on spammers. I started doing research on it. And then I eventually wrote a program called Spam Crunchers, which is not released, which is a very sophisticated spam tracking / reporting system. And that was where I started to get into the computer security thing. It didn't take me very long to realize that a lot of the spam came from infected hosts and people do stupid things like open up attachments, and I said, gee, there's got to be a way to let these people know not to do this kind of thing. So I looked for a medium with which I can do a TV program. I got offered several TV channels, none of which I really liked the restrictions that imposed upon me. So I decided now with the advent of the iPod video to put out a TV program called Crunch TV. It's crunchtv.net is a website, and up there you can view with QuickTime my very first podcast for Crunch TV. You can then at that point, my first episode was sponsored by a recording artist, Stevie B, who I then promoted his album and used some of his music in my program. Then after that, I've got other sponsors now because of coming out with other programs. All of my programs are sponsored, but all my programs are free and eventually downloadable from iTunes once we kick off our official release, which hasn't really been kicked off yet. We're going to do a good full-on press release and do the whole bit, you know, get that out. We want to get another episode up online first before we do that.
Fantastic.
So we have a sponsor, and each of our sponsors has an unlimited time at the end of the program to present their wares. In a lot of the programs that I'm going to have, I'm going to be showing networks and software and stuff like that. And all of the software that you'll see on my program will be donated software. that we're going to use for instance, how to sniff the network to determine whether or not your computer is being infected by a virus and whether it's trying to phone home, you know, call to its central location to report where you are, or report your keystrokes or whatever nasty things that it does. My first episode, I talked about how you can identify that the true source of an email message. I believe I made it clear to the viewer that they shouldn't use Outlook Express for this because you can't do that on Outlook Express. But I made it clear that it was a very easy thing to do. I took a typical PayPal authentication request, which is nothing more than a phishing mail, and showed that it came from some university. So, you know, and not from PayPal or whatever it was supposed to come from. And then at the end, I had my usual promotional gig with Stevie B. And on every one, each one of my podcasts are going to be totally running from beginning to end, totally uninterrupted without commercial announcement, where the sponsor will have their spiel at the end of the program. And it'll just be up to the prerogative of the viewer to decide whether they want to actually watch the sponsored part of it or not.
Awesome.
And so... But if they want more information on some of the software that I've shown, a lot of that software will be part of the sponsored thing. So they might want to go to the sponsored part of it and hear more about how to get a hold of the sniffer that was featured on my program.
That's fantastic.
Or whatever.
Very cool. I took the opportunity to check out the video podcast. I have to say, I was really impressed by the presentation, the graphics, and everything.
Yeah, we did a Hollywood style look and feel to it. Well, what do you expect?
Yeah.
I'm in Hollywood, so lots and lots of those people around here that have that kind of equipment to do that kind of thing. So it was not very hard to do the kind of eye-popping video that the particular podcast has, you know. And I made it in such a way, too, as to condense the time down of the program such that I can have a lot of, you know, information in a short period of time. And as you see, if you've seen and watched the video, you'll see that as I talk about it, you'll see visual displays which enhance what I say. And they'll look at the visual displays and say, oh, yeah, look at that. They'll see the URL of something very clearly displayed. And they can stop or write it down or slow it down or whatever. So I've been very careful also to make the information viewable on a 320 by 240 screen. So with that in mind and understanding the limitations of an iPod video, player, you know, I think I've done a pretty good job of making it digestible by any common person who would use a computer, whether they know anything about this stuff or not.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And each podcast that I do will have a lot of references. They'll have URLs. And then on the CrunchTV.net website, for each podcast and each URL, they can go up to that particular podcast, and then there'll be URLs explaining about how to get into more deeper information on what I talked about.
Very cool.
Anyway, I think we're out of time. Why don't you call me tomorrow?
Okay.
And we can carry on and give you enough time to think about what other questions you might want to ask.
Yeah. Okay.
Let's do it around, instead of at 1,
mm-hmm.
Let's do it 2 hours earlier. Let's say hour and a half earlier, like say 11:30 my time.
Okay.
Instead of at 1 my time.
That sounds
okay?
Good.
We'll try that. If I'm not there, just keep trying to reach me, all right?
Cool, we'll do.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll
okay, you guys.
Thank you very much for your time.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Hanging on it. Bye.
Bye.
Okay, fantastic.
That's it, ladies and gentlemen. You heard it here first. CrunchTV.net, Captain Crunch's newest video podcasting project.
So yeah, thank you for listening, and I think we'll chop it right here. And
we did rendering, a frame by frame rendering, because the shadows on the desk is also rendered, so it looks like I'm really on a nice polished desk when I interviewed Stevie B on his entertainment thing,
yeah.
Talking about electronic entertainment. Mm. Episode 3 is being sponsored by a company that does ComView, which is a sniffer company that does a sniffer for the Windows.
Right.
And we're going to be featuring that sniffer in one of our future episodes.
Awesome. So how much money does it kind of involve in doing something like that?
This didn't cost me anything, number one, because I just know all these people in the entertainment industry that are just, you know, that were kind of like getting behind me and pushing me into doing this to begin with.
Mm.
And, of course, once we get sponsorship going, then the sponsorship money will pay for it.
Cool. So, yeah, that's excellent. I mean, we're actually thinking of doing
that way we can get it out for free. And
yeah.
So, and all of our sponsors... We will not interrupt any of our programs for sponsored announcements except at the very end.
Yeah.
So if we use any products in our program, we want those companies also to put a little spiel at the end to give them a chance to say anything about their product that I didn't.
That's awesome. I mean, we're actually thinking of doing something like that. We're actually going off to New York in January to do our own kind of...
You'll have to come out here and visit me in California while you're in the country.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You'll probably be much, much warmer than New York.
If you're going to be doing podcasting, you're going to definitely want to get out here to Southern California anyway, because this is where all the entertainment is at.
Yeah, I mean, if that's an invite, then definitely we'll be knocking on your door.
Well, just contact me if you decide you want to come out. I live right across the street from NBC.
Awesome.
There's at least 6 movie studios within a 1.5-kilometer distance from me.
Wow.
Got Warner Brothers, Universal, Disney. God knows what else. I forgot them all. They're all over the place.
That will be cool. Yeah. I mean, we've just got pretty much a small team, and I don't know, we're still debating on the kind of things that we will include. And but, yeah, we'll leave that for another day. We won't talk about that now.
Right.
So, yeah, as soon as we've got Captain Crunch on, we'll just start talking about our stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, we've got a few questions.
Let's address those questions now.
My one is basically because you're regarded as a kind of a hacker celebrity. What's it like to be, you know, a known face?
Well, it means that I can never be employed ever. It means that I'm always constantly looking for sources of money.
Right.
It means that the only people that can employ me are outside the USA.
Right.
It means that I'm under a lot of scrutiny from not just the authorities, but from other people as well. Right. I do have privacy in the sense that, I can isolate myself and not be reachable by anybody. It's not a problem. Even though I openly tell everybody where I live, that doesn't seem to matter.
Hmm.
Except, of course, I don't want the spammers and the Russian mafia to know where I live.
Yeah.
They get pretty pissed off when they shut down more than 750,000 of their infected hosts.
Yeah, they would. Seeing as they've got quite a lot of money riding them. Well,
I've shortened the lifetime of their infected hosts from about 2 weeks down to a few hours.
Yeah. I mean, so even now, do you still have to be careful, like with the authorities, even now, this far on since all your involvements and your imprisonment and all that kind of stuff, is that still an issue?
Well, I'm not really worried about them coming to arrest me because I'm actively being very careful not to do anything illegal.
Yeah.
or get myself into a situation where there might be some questionable activity.
Yeah, sure. Hello?
I'm not really worried about them. I'm pretty open. You know, I do have my own private things going on that are just personal and private.
Sure.
And, you know, I am in contact with a number of people who are providing me with information on the spammer culture.
Right.
And I wish to keep that very private. So that kind of communication is very highly encrypted, of course.
Right, okay.
Other than that, and of course there is times when I've had to be in contact with the authorities, and every mail message that I do in contact with the authorities is all encrypted.
Yeah.
Other than that, I don't use encryption at all. I don't care about it. I don't care if people watch me.
Hmm.
It doesn't matter to me.
Yeah, well, you are releasing your own podcast and everything, so... You know,
yeah, I mean, I'm nothing to hide except when there's an investigation going on by the authorities, I have to hide that because authorities want that to be secret.
Yeah, definitely.
So, you know.
Yeah.
But I don't get involved with the authorities. I haven't in the past 2 years. I'm pretty I'm pretty removed from them. They've got their own little problems that they have to deal with.
Sure. Do you want to ask anything, Planet?
Yeah. Basically, Captain, I was wondering, because you've been in the hacking and the freaking scene for so long, and you were there the very early days of Apple, where they used to share a lot of their information about how their computers were built. They're very open about it. Steve Wozniak was, definitely. And then once that became kind of a commercial enterprise, it became very closed about what was really going on with their computers. And now that the internet's taken off, information has become very open to a lot of people again. I was really just wondering what your thoughts on that are. If it's a good thing or a bad thing or...
Run that by me one more time. The last part of it.
Back years ago, people were very open with how programs were written, how computers were being built in the 70s.
Well, yeah, okay, they're still open about it. I mean, look at the open source community getting quite popular. There's always some amount of opening going on, you know, openness going on. Only the large corporations are the ones that are not advocating openness.
Mm.
In the sense of, like, you know, programming or hacking. Hackers, of course, have to be a lot more careful if they're going to do anything illegal, because the tracking systems have now become very sophisticated. So it's a lot easier now to track down hackers than it ever was before, even though some of these hackers are isolating themselves with infected hosts and being controlled by robots rather than direct control of these systems they're hacking into. They think that they've got it. They think that they have a little bit of a cover, but it's getting to the point now where these things are, the authorities are picking up on a lot more sophisticated tracking mechanisms that are out there now. So there's all this pattern analysis going on. Right now the big thing is wiretapping and all this 9/11 crap that's been on TV lately. You know, about how our government's tapping systems. It doesn't surprise me in the least to have our conversations right now being recorded, even though we are on an encrypted link. That doesn't say that Skype doesn't have a little back door, a little secret little thing that they've been pressured to put on their network to allow people to allow authorities to tap into their system.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have much trust in it, although I'm developing my own system that's going to be very secure. I'm not going to allow anybody to tap into mine.
Sure.
That's
mainly...
That's one of the features I'm going to have on mine.
Whoops. Seem to close the call with Captain Crunch.
Hello.
Hello.
What happened?
Skype happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm putting up an Asterisk server for my own phone company.
Uh-huh.
We'll be using the SIP and the IAX protocol for people to communicate in a very secure way. And I'm not going to allow anybody in any back doors into my system.
Sure.
But I'm going to carefully screen who I. That's one of the features I'm going to have online.
Whoops. Seem to close the call with Captain Crunch.
Hello.
Hello.
What happened?
Skype.
Yeah.
Skype happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm putting up an Asterisk server for my own phone company.
Uh-huh.
We'll be using the SIP and the IAX protocol for people to communicate in a very secure way. And I'm not going to allow anybody in any back doors into my system.
Sure.
But I'm going to carefully screen who I'm going to let into my club. I'm certainly not going to let anybody that I think's a shady person, you know, Al-Qaeda or whatever they call, you know, into there. It's not going to be that kind of a site. It's going to be like a site for, like, sharing information, but at the same time provide a little privacy for my members.
Yeah.
Along with some other features.
That's kind of like the general feel of maybe what we talk about is privacy, the decline of kind of privacy that's happening mainly in the US and, well, now in the UK.
It's all a good idea. If you're using any kind of electronic media, whether it's text or voice, you can pretty much assume there's a 99.9% chance that old federalities are out there listening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Regardless of whether you're using PGP or not, I'm sure they've got ways. I'm pretty sure right now that they've pressured PGP into having a little back door to their system. PGP people aren't going to admit it.
Yeah, they're not going to disclose that their encryption system is, you know, being hacked, so to speak.
Yeah, but the encryption algorithms are well known, and it's not uncommon for. I mean, if I really want to be private, I'm sure that I can cause them to spend lots and lots of time and money trying to encrypt my stuff, decrypt my stuff, but why bother?
Yeah.
You know, it's not worth it to me. I got nothing to hide.
Sure.
Except any personal relationships that I have with people in my own, you know, my world.
Mm.
They're just private, personal stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of like a never-ending tipping battle between privacy and the war on terror, if so to speak. And I think we've seen that here in the.
You can pretty much best bet your sweet dippy that any self-respecting Al Qaeda member is going to have a little thumb drive, and they're going to put all their encryption keys on that, and they're going to keep that with them wherever they go, and it's going to be encrypted, requiring a password to get on it. Most of these things are password protected now.
Yeah.
But I'm sure the authorities can probably break into it, but they still have to have the encryption key, so it's decrypted. So, I mean, it's still possible to cause the government to spend lots and lots of effort and time to break something. You know, but I don't know. It depends on how smart they are, you know.
Yeah. It's pretty ridiculous when they say that, you know, if you've got nothing to hide, then what's the problem of not having, not encrypting your stuff? Where you would, as a kind of hacker mentality.
Yeah, but people do have things to hide.
Yeah.
And that, you know, companies have information that's proprietary and secret.
Yeah.
And they've got to protect that, you know.
But, I mean, like, even if I wanted to speak to, let's say, my grandma in whatever, you know, through Skype, I would prefer. And I wouldn't mind if that was encrypted, even if it's a conversation about, you know, how cats are doing
Skype,
and things like that. So
the Skype does use encryption. So their stuff is encrypted.
Yeah, but the government's claim is even if that conversation is about, you know, plants or whatever, we still want to listen to it because it could be possible that the code names that you're using for, you know, whatever could be a terrorist attack, you know, so it's a weird argument.
We're lighting up all kinds of indicators.
Yeah,
they say right now from the words we're using.
Terrorist attack and flowers. Oh,
really?
Well, you know, they can download this show if they want to, so.
But, my whole concept is, I'm obviously not gonna use this media for, anything except, my own personal communications.
Sure.
Anyway, got any other questions? Pertaining to anything?
Yeah, Planet, do you have anything?
I was just wondering about the future of CrunchTV.net. When are the new episodes coming out?
I hope soon. The guy that's doing the producer of my program had a few other jobs that he had to do ahead of him for Christmas. So more than likely, sometime between Christmas and New Year's, we hope to get our second episode out, and I can start on the third episode soon. I just attended the Vintage Computer Festival a couple of months ago, or about a month ago, with Steve Wozniak and the Homebrew Computer Club meeting.
Yeah.
So we've been seeing a lot of interviews with a number of people. One such person, what was the name of that British company that does this, a Rector set?
Oops. Hello.
Hello. Yeah. So what was the it's a British toy thing they use to build mechanical things. It's called Rector set. Americans call it an Rector set.
Is it a
Meccano?
Meccano.
Maybe.
Meccano. Okay, that's it. Somebody built a Babbage machine out of Meccanos.
Oh, wow.
A complete running, functioning Babbage machine.
Wow.
And featured it at this show. It basically was designed to compute squares.
Wow.
It just goes one square of one, two square of two, up 8 zillion square of 8 zillion, and goes on and on and on and on, now up to about like 30 or 40 digits of precision.
Wow.
All mechanical.
Wow.
It's amazing. And then, of course, they got the old, and at the Vintage Computer Show, it was at the Computer History Museum in Mountain View. And also another place at the place called the Digibarn in the Santa Cruz Mountains. Every single computer they have in the Digibarn and also in the Computer History Museum is actually functioning and working. With the exception of the Cray and the exception of some of the old GENIAC computer models that they've got there. But it goes through chronologically way back at the beginning when the Babbage machine was first invented, all the way back to the Roman days when people were using these mechanical things to calculate things, all the way up to the present.
Yeah, I'd love to go to that.
You better go to Mountain View. Got to go to the Mountain View Computer Museum. You'll also see Steve Wozniak's Blue Box.
Oh, yeah, they've got up there, yeah. It is a crude piece of machinery.
Definitely.
With a little speaker coming out. Yeah.
Yep. A little acoustical coupler.
Mm. So, how do you see the kind of future of telecommunications? Do you think it will move into a kind of more diverse kind of mobile technology where you step into a house and it automatically figures out that you're in your home, switches to voice over
IP? That already exists.
Yeah, but
that already exists.
But will it become a kind of mainstream where it's going to be in every home instead of?
It's already in every home.
Yeah.
Look at the number of people using Skype and White Phone. I mean, there's just so many of them out there, you know.
Yeah, well, it's not here in England.
Whitephone.com is actually in the UK. It's a company I work for.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're right there in the UK.
Wow. So, that's news to me. But, I mean, I know that Vonage is just bringing out that system where you have a phone, a physical phone that works with Wi-Fi and detects where you are, pretty much, you know, if you're in your house.
Yeah.
Sort of thing. Yeah. So do you
think you switch on your phone and it registers to your local Wi-Fi network, and now you've got yourself a phone that you can just sit there at your coffee shop, runs on batteries or whatever, and it's just like a cell phone. In fact, I'm sure that new cell phones that are going to be made will also have SIP capability on them anyway.
Yeah. So that's basically what you think is the kind of future.
Yeah, I think what's going to happen is cell phones are going to be having Wi-Fi SIP on them.
Mm.
More than likely, I think that'd be a pretty common thing.
Yeah.
So the cell phones that are that you see today, well, yeah, if you got a Vonage account, sure, just switch your phone to SIP mode. Now you got yourself a Vonage phone. You can use it to call into a Captain Crunch PBX also. You know,
yeah.
Acoustic coupler with your blue box and make a blue box call on my PBX.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, I mean, there's just.
I'm gonna have all the sounds. So when you call my PBX. You know, it's that dial 1 for red box, 2 yeah. for blue box, you know. And you get the kerchink noise and all the other sounds that you get from a trunk level access. Yeah. And you 2600 down the line, it'll come back and go kerchink, you know. Yeah. It'll do all the things that a trunk would do, awesome. Only it's emulated, you know. It's not for real. You can't really make a free call on it.
Well,
but I can set it up to where you can actually make a 1-minute call anywhere in the country on it.
That's awesome. I think
that won't cost me anything.
As far as a historical kind of thing goes, and playing around with stuff that you really can't do anymore unless you tried or looked hard enough, that I think that's fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, coming back into freaking right now, it's just been opened up quite a lot with voice over IP and being able, like with free world dial up and stuff like that, where you can dial other countries, you can dial other countries.
Yeah, well, making free calls is certainly not passe anymore. I mean, it's certainly not a big exciting thing anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
With Skype and all these VoIP systems, it's not uncommon for anybody to make a free call anywhere in the world now.
Yeah.
So that's not the incentive anymore.
Hmm.
The incentive is just building your own voice communication system. And now, instead of you being able to hack an existing network, you can make your own phone company. And you can have hack it to your heart's delight and not have to worry about getting thrown in jail, you know?
That's fantastic because, you know, like 4 or 5 years ago, that wasn't a possible thing unless you had, let's say, a lot of money or a lot of resources to do it. But now it's
all you
possible.
Need
just a
Linux
download
box, just an Intel box.
Mm-hmm.
What, $300 or $400?
Yeah.
Connection to put it on.
Yeah.
And you got yourself a PBX system that'll work with any SIP phone.
Yeah. You can actually download
all you have to do.
Live Asterix now on the CD.
Yeah. I'm gonna meet. Oops. Hang on, just a second.
Okay.
Someone else is calling me.
Cool.
Okay, sorry, I had another incoming call.
That's fine.
Just a second.
Okay,
I'm back again.
Cool.
Now, what were you talking about? I forget.
Live CDs, Asterix, and stuff like that. The ability to...
Well, yeah, $200 or $300 of money, and you got yourself your own phone company. You could set up your own numbering plan. And you could have anybody anywhere in the world have your own company, and you could... You know, you can even offer outside PSTN access into your local area if you want, you know.
Yeah.
I foresee a big P2P system where people will just be able to set up their own servers and offer a local phone service in their area. Like if I want to call Russia, I contact some SIP server in Russia owned by some private individual that's got a connection to... that's got a local connection to Kiev, and will give me a local Kiev dial tone, and I could call a number from it, you know.
Hmm.
So, you know, that's possible now. Anybody can do that.
And you especially with the kind of advent.
And with not much more than $300 or $400.
Yeah.
So set up their own servers and offer a local phone service in their area. Like if I want to call Russia, I contact some... SIP server in Russia owned by some private individual that's got a connection to that's got a local connection to Kiev and will give me a local Kiev dial tone and I could call a number from it, you know.
Hmm.
So, you know, that's possible now. Anybody can do that.
And especially with the kind of advent.
And with not much more than $300 or $400.
Yeah.
So long-distance phone companies are going to have to be scrambling to offer better and more services, and that long-distance calling on a handset, either a mobile or a plug-in phone line, is not going to be very profitable anymore.
Yeah. and especially now that that kind of internet speeds are doubling nearly year by year. We're looking at 24 megabits here in the UK pretty soon. The kind of distributed computing possibilities are endless, so people literally can serve their own, you know, anything they want from their own house.
Yeah. Any other questions?
Yeah, just want to ask,
I need to get out of here in a few minutes.
Cool. Just want to ask you a little bit about the raving scene.
The rave scene, yeah. Raves have been made illegal around here now, unfortunately. It's not... There's no real... I think the last authority-sanctioned rave or party I've been to is Earth Dance, where all of the venues all over the world all at the same time had a big party. It was like about...
Bloody Skype.
Yeah, I hate Skype so much. Hi.
Stupid Skype.
I'm glad I got that sound clip now.
So anyway, and so I went to one in Tucson. It was quite good, out in the middle of the desert. I like the outdoor ones. L.A.'s area still has got the Moon Tribe parties. They're very secret. You have to be in on the phone tree to find out where those are. Those are hidden, well hidden out in the desert, and unless you know somebody that's part of that scene, and they've got a very, very heavy screening ability, even sometimes I have trouble getting on the list. So once you're on the phone tree, they call you up, give you an info number, you call that info number, and it gives you a map point, which is usually a rest stop out on some remote highway somewhere in the desert, at which time you go to the rest stop, and there's nobody that looks anything like a raver, but there's just a couple of people sitting on a picnic table. You got to know which one to walk up to, and you got to know how to say the right thing in order for them to open up to let you know where the second map point is, and there's usually three map points. By the time you get to the third one, they might ask you for some money for donations and something, and then they'll give you a map of how to get to the actual one. Usually what happens is they'll tell you where you park your car. Usually it's in a place where lots and lots of other cars that are parked there won't arouse any suspicion. Hmm. And then they'll shuttle you to the party inside a rider van.
Wow.
So you get on one of those rider moving vans, and they pile up, you know, 20 or 30 people in there, and they haul you off out in the desert where the party is. There's no cars. They can't tell that the party's there.
That's crazy.
Unless they have to be flying over the area at the time.
Yeah.
And usually somewhere between 50 and 60,000 people can show up.
Yeah.
All word of mouth, of course. I mean, those are the parties that I like. Germany's got a lot of really good parties in the summertime. They got the outdoor festivals. Some of them last up to a week. And I got the Bluff and the Antares festivals, and those ones are always good. Of course, and of course, you got the Full Moon Party in Thailand, Koh Phangan, and not so much in Goa anymore as they used to be. Most of the Goa scene now is pretty dead.
Wow! So you could literally the Indian
government kind of shut everybody down.
Well, why do you think that is, that they've just been made legal?
Drugs. What else? I think it's the freedom. I think it's the freedom to party and the freedom of being able to do what you want at these things.
Yeah.
And the authorities are afraid of that.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, look at what they did in the UK. What criminal justice law, what making it illegal for more than 15 people to gather together and sing to repetitive beats.
Yeah.
Come on, man. This is ridiculous.
Yeah, it's... Like
I remember I've heard reports about the UK. They have these big giant rave gatherings where they go from town to town.
Yeah.
And rave posses, and they used to have these big parties.
That was quite a while back now, yeah.
Yeah, well, I wish I would have had a chance to experience that. It must have been pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, now it's even illegal for like more than a group of five people to stay in one place.
Yeah, and a few old school Brits came into San Francisco called the Wicked Posse.
Yeah.
With Yano and Marky Mark and Garth would be having wicked parties every month in the Sonoma District of San Francisco. Most of them were at pretty sleazy venues, hot, sweaty, small places. That were easy to hide. most of these places are like in the central areas of the city block, so they're not by the street, but they're by alleyways. So you go by the street, you can't hear the music.
Hmm.
They button them up really tight, too, so no sound gets out. They close the windows, gets really hot in there.
Wow.
Not too safe, I might add.
Yeah. That's...
But that, and most of the ones now are all underground. You can't have a sanctioned party anywhere. They used to have parties over at the Home Base Depot in Oakland. Big, huge venue, call up to 50,000-60,000 people in there. It's an old warehouse. And they used to get permits to have the party until the fire marshal came in, and it made it virtually impossible to get a place to fire code so they can have any more parties in there. So that ended that. I mean, the authorities are doing everything in their power to think of every kind of an excuse possible to prevent the parties.
Wow.
In San Francisco, there's a late night coalition, a group of nonprofit club owners and people who are rave promoters are trying to persuade local government into allowing parties to go past 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
There's a curfew now. You know, if you play rave music, you've got to be done it by 1 o'clock.
Wow.
Not even two. You know, they got to shut it down at one. And only one or two clubs in San Francisco that I know of still have a permit to go beyond 5 in the morning. So all the old clubs that closed at 2 would open up at 6 in the morning and catch the partygoers for their after parties. Like they end up in San Francisco, which is a club that closes at 2 but opens up at 6 in the morning on Sundays. It catches all the after party people, you know.
That's insane. So it's locked down.
Oh, it's not like it used to be, that's for sure. Except there are a lot of underground parties still, and they're all very hard to get into, and they're not very big. A typical good party to me is somewhere with about 150 people.
Yeah.
You get more than that, and it's almost certain going to get busted. Most of the way to get busted is cars parked on the road. You track the cops. They say, oh, what's going on here? Yeah. There's no cars on the road for miles and miles. All of a sudden, there's a big cluster of cars. Mm-hmm. Oops. That party would get busted. First cop drives by, it's busted. So people can figure out, you know. So what they do is they're very, very picky about where you park your car when you go to these things. They have shuttle bus services in and out of the main thing if it's far away. And they do everything in their power to try to just not be noticed. You know, like for instance, they'll set up the party first, even before announcing the location of the party.
Yeah.
They'll get all the sound system all set up, cranked up, tested, working. And then when everything is set up, and then when they're ready for the people, then they get on their cell phones, they call their voicemail service, and they change the outgoing message to where the party is. So,
oh, wow.
And so you just have to check your voice, the info line often until there's an announcement. Once it's announced, then you go to the series of map points and way stations through their screening mechanism.
Wow. That's high security there.
yeah, exactly. In fact, one of the things that got me to the rave scene all together was the fact that they were using encryption to notify where the parties were.
Mm.
And they were part of the cypherpunk mentality, the people in the area that set up PGP and had meetings every month, and one of the guys at that cypherpunk meeting was one of the rave promoters and got me involved in the rave scene. And one of the things that I got involved in the rave scene was, one of the things I'd do is I'd have a little table and give away free PGP copies on PC discs to the ravers. And then I started liking the music, and then later on after I was fit to dance, I started dancing.
So it's like a whole underground thing that I wasn't even aware of, that it's like that, that it's even organized to that extent to keep it locked.
Yeah, it's very well organized. Yeah. There's also a non-profit group that goes to most parties all over the country called Dance Safe.
Right.
And what these people do is, if you buy drugs and if you decide you want to do drugs, these, what these people will do is they'll test the drugs for you to make sure that there isn't anything unsafe in your drugs.
Right, okay.
And they'll let you know what the purity of the drugs are, or whether it's got any dangerous other things in it.
Hmm.
And so, they just... I take your e-tablet, scrape a little bit off into a test tube, shake it around a little bit with some fluids and stuff, and if it turns a certain color, then it's pretty nasty stuff.
Yeah. You know not to take it.
And then they have their setup. They're based out of San Francisco and a number of other places, and they always go to rave parties, and they always set up a booth, and they have drug education brochures and things like that to try to give out to people. And, you know, but if people do their drugs responsibly and not get not make a big thing about it, then they probably would still be legal today. You know?
Yeah. And there's not a lot of I think that kind of education through you know, here you go, it's turned red or whatever. You know, you could die if you'd taken this or something. It's a bit more of a shock than you know. Just
I remember one New Year's party in L.A. a while back, where somebody was distributing bad drugs, and like 100 people wound up in a hospital.
Fuck. That's crazy.
Too bad Dance Safe was there.
Yeah.
That was before they started a little... In fact, I bet that particular incident was probably what got them started.
Mm, mm. Yeah, that's new to me. Yeah, that's pretty good.
Any other quick questions? Because now is the time to ask, because I am about ready to get out of here.
Cool. Well, I think we can let you go unless Planet has anything to add.
No, I've asked everything I wanted to ask.
Cool. Well, thank you very much for your time. We know that you're a busy man.
Yeah, I'll be back in touch later. So I'm here for any last minute questions. If you see me online, feel free to call.
Okay, one last question. Do you have a whistle, a Captain Crunch whistle?
I don't have one.
Ah, right, because me and Planet were thinking that you've got like a whole crate full of them. People singing in them.
No, I haven't. I didn't think about buying them at the time.
Oh, right.
You know.
Well, we just wanted to know, clarify that urban legend.
Right.
Okay. Cool. Well, thank you very much.
Keep in touch.
Will do. Thank you.
Yeah. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Cool. Well, that was the legendary Super Freak, Captain Crunch.
The one and only.
Yeah. And we're out. Watch me and your mom smoking up in the car. Watch me.
War to wage. It's time to start a new age. Watch me.